Uktas. Addressed. Tam. Her. Vihaya. Releasing. Indraha. The king of heaven. Deva Rishi. Of the saint Narada Muni. Manayan. Honoring. Vachaha. The words. Anantapriha. For one who is very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhakya. By devotion. Enam. This woman. Parikramya. Circumambulating. Divam. To the heavenly planets. Yayao. Returned. So, in translation, when the great saint Narada Muni had thus spoken, King Indra, being respectful to Narada's words, immediately released my mother. Because of my being a devotee of the Lord, all the demigods circumambulated her. Then they returned to their celestial kingdom. So you can repeat. When the great saint Narada Muni had thus spoken, King Indra, being respectful to Narada's words, immediately released my mother. Because of my being a devotee of the Lord, all the demigods circumambulated her. Then they returned to their celestial kingdom. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Although King Indra and the other demigods are exalted personalities, they were so obedient to Narada Muni that King Indra immediately accepted Narada Muni's words concerning Prahlad Maharaj. This is called understanding by the Parampara system. Indra and the demigods did not know that a great devotee was in the womb of Kayadu, the wife of Hiranyakashipu. But they accepted the authoritative statements of Narada Muni and immediately offered their respects to the devotee by circumambulating the woman in whose womb he was living. To understand God and the devotees by the Parampara system is the process of knowledge. There is no need to speculate about God and his devotee. One should accept the statements of a bona fide devotee and thus try to understand. So, it yuktas tam vahayandro devarsher manayan vachaha anandapriya bhat jainam parikramya divam yayao. So, Om Magana Timidandasya, Gananjana Shilakaya, Chakshur Un Meditam, Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, there's many topics here. First of all, I guess it's not acting properly. How did this happen? Everybody hears the buzzing, or is it just me? It's just the buzzing in my head. Anyways, sometimes when you get older, you think it's just the buzzing in your head. So, strange. So, Omagana. Okay. I'll behave myself. If I had a pacemaker like my mother, I know that would be the cause of it. So, getting back to the point. So, there's several points being mentioned here, or in relationship with this particular verse. First one is that you really can't understand who is a devotee by their birth. You can't understand a devotee by the way they look. You can only understand who is a devotee by some objective symptoms. Of course, here you find the parampara explanation by Narada Muni. That's one way you can understand. And of course, the primary way of understanding who is actually a devotee of the Lord is by their actions and by their speech. Of course, there's that typical example that Srila Prabhupada gives of the jackal in the forest who had purple paint spilled on him. And as a result of that, all the animals in the forest were offering their dandabats to him, including the lion king, the king of the forest. And until they heard him crying out in the evening when the other jackals did their thing, they didn't understand who he actually was. In other words, when he opened his mouth, then they understood he was a rascal, and then, of course, then they ate him at that particular juncture. So, really, we have to be careful in our dealing with Vaishnavas. I mean, sometimes, I mean, I find that, you know, you look at a certain person, and they may be, from your point of view, ugly or disfigured or something like that, and you may feel some antipathy towards them because of that. Not that you would naturally think they're not a devotee, but you feel some criticism of someone because of the way they look, isn't it? I mean, it's quite common. Oh, he looks crazy, or she looks ugly, or whatever. And you just judge a Vaishnava accordingly. I've seen this happens in our, you know, my consciousness, that you look at someone and then you judge them by the way they look. And it's really, for Vaishnava, that's not at all significant. I mean, I was just reading on the way back yesterday Burjan Prabhu's book about, you know, My Glorious Master. I'm sure some of you have read that book. It's a very nice book. And he was saying, and many do it, he said, you know, the first time they saw Prabhupada, they saw, you know, he was very short. They were considering before they saw Srila Prabhupada that he would be extremely tall, and that, you know, the first time they saw him, he was surrounded by these really tall people born in the West. I'm not going to say the Rakshas people, that would be an offense, but, you know, these really tall people, you know, we Westerners sometimes tend to be a little tall, and then they look at it, I thought he was big. So they would judge Prabhupada on that standard. Or, you know, in the mind, these things happen. So we have to be very careful about rushing to judgment about Vaishnavas, because generally we have that tendency of just like labeling people immediately based upon first impression. I think they say first impressions or lasting impressions. So we should just be careful, because we could be committing offenses. That's the second topic I wanted to talk about here. Like, of course, we have King Indra, who was immediately rushing to judgment because the child in the womb of Kayadu was in the demon family, and he was thinking, naturally, it's a demon. Just like people sometimes in India, they criticize the devotees in the West, and they say, you know, naturally, you're not Brahmins, or naturally, you're not qualified. Of course, there's that one story. And when Prabhupada was present, the devotees were going to see this devotee in Vrindavan, and the devotee kept, and this other devotee in Vrindavan was telling the Western devotees that if you do your service nicely in your next life, you're going to be born in India or born in Vrindavan in a Brahminical family, and then you can advance gradually in devotional service. And when Prabhupada heard that, he became a little upset, and he said, you can go and tell that devotee, that person, that if he does his service next nicely, in his next life, he can be born in the Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world. So, so we have to be very careful. So one of the main topics here in this verse is how to deal with Vaishnavas. First of all, don't come to the conclusion that someone's not a Vaishnava. And secondly, if they are a Vaishnava, don't criticize them because of past sinful activities, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He describes these different ways that you can, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and also Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, describe the different ways that one finds fault or criticizes or offends a Vaishnava, and especially talking about their past life, or even what they did after they accepted Krishna consciousness. You know, sometimes we look at someone and they committed some activity after they joined Krishna, and then they pick themselves up. And then we just think, well, that's a, you know, whatever. You know, we put a label on that. I'm not going to, yeah, or that's a sex maniac. Or, you know, I'm not going to go into the other labels because that might be a little controversial. Or that's a marijuana or drug addict. But actually, they can pick themselves up. So one's not supposed to consider those things. One's not supposed to consider present reactions to past sinful activities, which Prabhupada describes as like the fan slowing down. I was talking about that to the devotees in Mexico. They were talking about how the fan has some momentum, and Prabhupada said the same thing. The fan has some momentum, and gradually it's slowing down. And they asked me, how many years does it take to slow down? And I said to them, that depends whether you plug it in again. It may take many, many years. I said it may take 10, 20, 30 years before the fan actually stops. But you have to be very attentive in devotional service to expect the fan to stop. So we shouldn't criticize a devotee for the present reactions that they may be experiencing due, or the token reactions that they may be experiencing due to past activities. So for the way they look, that's also a present reaction to past activities. Or let's say legal complications that they're undergoing, or what they did in the past, or accidental deviation. You know, practically anybody can make a little mistake or accidentally deviate, just lose their temper one time. That's an accidental deviation. Like if someone comes up to me and insults me, and I just take it the wrong way, they go on Facebook and they say something nasty about me, and I say to them, you too, buddy, or you too, lady. Nowadays, ladies are getting very expert and insulting too. Then people shouldn't criticize me for that, because it's just an accidental, you know, just slip. That happens sometimes with any of us, an accidental slip. Unless, of course, you're an absolutely pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of God, and there's no accidents then. But so you don't criticize a devotee for that. Kantiya pratijanihi name bhakti pranashati. My devotee will never perish. He will quickly achieve a goal of Krishna consciousness. So as far as understanding the dangers of criticizing or offending a devotee, that's the first offense on chanting. We were having some discussion about that in Mexico in regard to initiations, and all of us were actually stressing, there were three of us giving initiation, myself, Guru Prasad Swami, and Bhakti Sundar Maharaj, who you may not know, who used to be Jagat Chakshur in Venezuela. He was one of the brahmacharis in Venezuela when I was a temple president. It's very nice to see him taking the position of being Guru's Prabhupada disciple. So we were talking about offending Vaishnavas at the first offense on chanting, and how dangerous it is, even if the offense is committed inadvertently. And there was one story that we told, that once upon a time, Srila Rupa Goswami was absorbed in internal meditation on Krishna's pastimes. And one pastime he was meditating on was the pastime of Krishna arranging for Srimati Radharani to take flowers from a tree, and the branches of the tree were quite tall, quite high. And so in order to arrange for Srimati Radharani to take the flowers from the tree, he was hiding in the tree and putting his weight on the branches of the tree so Srimati Radharani could reach the branches of the tree. So as she was doing that, she was holding on to the branch and grabbing some of the flowers. And Krishna, in order to be very tricky, jumped from the tree, and guess what happened? the branch sprung up, and Srimati Radharani was hanging onto the branch so she could get the flowers. I mean, sometimes when you are collecting flowers, I experienced that in Govardhan. When I'm collecting flowers, I have to stand on my tiptoes and bring the branch down. There's some of these trees. I forget the type of tree. What's the type of tree that has these very nice flowers? Plumeria, your plumeria tree. You don't have them here in North Carolina. But anyway, beautiful plumeria trees. And sometimes, you know, we have to really stand on our tiptoes, hold the branch down, and then, of course, Krishna's not standing up there holding the branch down for us, so we don't have to worry about flying into the air. And they're small branches. But in this particular case, Srimati Radharani flew into the air, and then Krishna jumped down from the tree. It's a famous story. It actually happened around the Kushima Sarovara area. And Krishna said, you know, I'll catch you. And Srimati Radharani was so angry at that particular point. That's her man, or anger. She didn't want to be caught by Krishna because she understood it was Krishna's trick. Actually, there was one devotee who just took initiation, not for me, and the name was Mana Leela. That means the Leela of getting angry. Imagine getting a name, you know. Your name is anger, the Leela of anger. But of course, that's in Radharani's Leela. So what happened is that she flew up in the tree, and Srila Rupa Goswami was watching this pastime, because when a devotee like Srila Rupa Goswami meditates on a pastime, it's not just like some vague image. When I meditate on something, you know, it's sort of like some image, that fleeting image, isn't it? That comes and goes. You know, if I try to think of Govardhan, yeah, I can think of Govardhan for a second, and next minute my mother appears in my mind. I wish. Or my computer or something else appears in my mind. But when these devotees, like Rupa Goswami, meditate on something, it's actually clearer than we see here. Actually, one thing we experience as we get older, things get less clear. Especially at night. You know, we were with Gopal in the car last night, and I said, how can you see? Anyway, so it's just clear. It's crystal clear. He's seen it. Not only seen it, it's a whole sensory experience. Just like nowadays people are talking about the virtual reality, you know, putting on these glasses. You've heard of this before? They put on these glasses and they're like, yeah, Google Glasses enhance reality. But virtual reality is where you put on these goggles, and wherever you turn, they're in this virtual world. And then they want to have haptic feedback too, which just means with the feelings and the hands. So you're gonna connect, or just like they had in that movie, The Matrix, that you had complete experience in a virtual world. So the experience of a devotee like Rupa Goswami is a complete experience, a complete sensory experience. There's the smell, the taste, the touch, all the different senses are engaged. It's not just like watching some stupid computer screen and seeing a movie about Krishna's pastimes. So he was doing it, and of course as he watched this, or let's say was immersed in the pastime, better than watching would be immersion, he was immersed in this pastime, he started laughing. I mean, obviously it's funny. There's a lot of Krishna's pastimes that are funny, because that's one of the indirect rasas that Krishna has, humor. Krishna's a very humorous person. I mean, sometimes he's serious, sometimes, just like he has these four qualities, Dhirodatta, Dhirodatta, Dhirupashanta, and Dhiralalita. The four qualities described in the nectar devotion, isn't it? He's playful, he's serious, he's joking. I mean, they're contradictory qualities, but they're exhibited sometimes simultaneously and sometimes at different times. So Rupa Goswami was laughing at this whole pastime. At the same time, there was a great devotee of Krishna who happened to come to see Rupa Goswami. And this great devotee of Krishna, he had some physical deformity. In other words, he was crippled or something like that. I mean, like that Astavakra Muni. Astavakra Muni was actually bent in eight different places. And sometimes people laughed. Of course, they got cursed and they became some of the demons in Krishna's pastimes. So we don't curse people if they laugh at us. So what happened is he came by and, you know, Rupa Goswami was in trance, but from time to time his eyes opened, even in trance. Like devotees in Bhagavatam class, they can sleep with their eyes open. So his eyes opened, and then Rupa Goswami, he thought Rupa Goswami is looking at him and laughing at him. And so what happened is immediately he felt offended, or, you know, he felt upset, because you can't feel upset. He thought he was being offended. And so he just was hurt. And basically he left the scene, and Rupa Goswami, his meditation broke like that. And he just tried to get it back. I mean, sometimes that happens. You just really have some really nice chanting, and then all of a sudden, you can't get it back no matter how much you force yourself. Isn't it? We've experienced that. It's just like, come on, what happened to that ecstasy? It's not always because we offended a devotee. It may be due to the fact that we became proud. Like Krishna removed himself from the gopis' presence because they were thinking we're the most fortunate girls in the universe. And Krishna wanted to show them, you know, develop some humility. So Krishna does that to us too. I mean, he puts us in different circumstances. I was explaining it to one devotee last night, that he was complaining about the weather, it's so dark and gray. And I said to him, this is an experience to learn something. I mean, to bring us closer to Krishna. Everything that happens to us, every single bit of anxiety that we're put in to, whether it's a management anxiety or something we like or something we don't like, it's just Krishna's arrangement. And we just have to take shelter of Krishna's holy names in a humble way. That's one way to develop humility. So, anyway, so Srila Rupa Goswami's meditation broke and he didn't know what happened. He tried his best to get it back and nothing happened. He said, come on, Krishna, what's happened? So he went to his Siksha Guru. Siksha Guru was Sanatana Goswami. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was his guru, but Sanatana Goswami was his guru also, in Siksha sense, his older brother. And he said to him, you know, what happened? My meditation broke. And actually, it's nice also to understand how the Vaishnavas would interact like that, reveal their minds and confidence to each other. That's also a very important lesson for us, because many times we have this spiritual, let's say, challenge, and, you know, we just keep it within ourselves, but actually we should be in confidence, be able to reveal it, have someone help us or give us advice or facilitate us in understanding what the issue is. And this is what Sanatana Goswami did. He said to Rupa Goswami, he said, you must have offended someone. And Rupa Goswami, offended someone? He said, I'm just in meditation. How can I offend anyone? You know, I've just seen Krishna's pastimes. And Sanatana Goswami said, well, the only reason for losing a taste like that is offenses to Vaishnavas. And that is a fact. That is the primary reason for us having difficulty or not being able to focus on Krishna's names is the offenses against Vaishnavas. Of course, there are 10 offenses against chanting, but the offense against Vaishnavas, in one sense, is considered the one with the most devastating effect. I mean, sometimes other offenses are described as the most serious offense or something, but the most devastating effect is the offense against Vaishnavas, with one's mind, with one's body, with one's words. And this, of course, is called the Mata Hati, the mad elephant offense, in which one's in which one's creeper of devotion becomes demolished or trampled to bits. And we've seen this, actually I've seen this even in many ISKCON leaders, previous leaders, that I've seen in many cases where you have people in a big, big position, and they were trying their best to please Prabhupada and whatever, and there may have been some other issues, but they criticized even Vaishnavas or Vaishnavas outside of our society, and even demonize them. And eventually those people, I mean, people in very high positions, they fell down because they demonized people. They even one person went to the extent of burning another Vaishnava's books. No, I'm not going to tell the story anyway about that. But he burned another Vaishnava's books, and then he just was losing his spiritual life, and eventually there's a happy ending to the story because he took shelter of the Vaishnava and begged for forgiveness, and then he got his spiritual life back. But, you know, due to our pride, sometimes even in defending the movement, we actually commit offenses against, you know, very exalted Vaishnavas or any Vaishnava. So we have to be very careful. So anyway, getting on with the story, so I have time to finish it, is that Sanatana Goswami said, you committed an offense against a Vaishnava. That's the only reason you've lost a taste like that. And Rupa Goswami said, but which Vaishnava? And this is more to the story than you'd normally hear. Sanatana Goswami said, if you don't know who it is, you should have a festival and distribute prasad and big Vaishnava festival, somehow or other, get the money for it, even though they were Goswamis. I guess they had some wealthy disciples. So you should have a festival, and whoever doesn't come, whichever Vaishnava doesn't come, he's the one who you've offended. And so Rupa Goswami somehow or other arranged this big festival, and the Vaishnavas came. They were very happy eating prasadam, healthy prasadam. So, sprouts and everything. Anyway, they're eating prasadam, and Rupa Goswami noticed that, you know, there's one Vaishnava who didn't come. And so he, because sometimes if someone is hurt, you know, they don't want to come in the presence of the person who has hurt them. It's actually painful. And I think many of us have experienced this, that if someone hurt us, even by accident, you know, it's very painful to be with that person. So, you know, even if they're holding a festival, you know, I'm not going today. I have some other things to do. And so Rupa Goswami understood who it was. He went to that other person, the person who had some physical issues, and he said, have I offended you? I mean, what is the problem? Why didn't you come? And this person said, well, you were laughing at my deformity. You know, I was hurt by that because I perceived that you were laughing, and it was painful for me to perceive that. And Rupa Goswami said, no, I was laughing at Krishna's pastimes that I had just seen. He described the pastime, and his Vaishnava was very relieved. And the Vaishnava actually said, you know, please forgive me for thinking that you were laughing at me for this. And Rupa Goswami said, please forgive me for giving you the impression that I was laughing at you for that. And they both embraced each other, and they started a dance in ecstasy. You know, it's a famous story. So the point is to be very careful, just like we have this word in relationship with the spiritual master, badanwi sabadana mote. Sabadana means caution. So we have to be very cautious in dealing with all Vaishnavas, whether they are part of the Krishna conscious movement or even Vaishnavas, Prabhupada said even Christians are Vaishnavas. Christians are people following their particular religion. I mean, of course, obviously if someone's doing something completely demoniac like attacking and raping women in the name of religion, I mean, that's not a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by their qualities. The qualities, of course, Atitikshava Kurunika Surada Sarvadeina Majata Shatva Santa Sadhava Sadhavushana. This is a non-denominational description of a Vaishnava. You know, we're not supposed to be denominational. Sometimes people ask us, are you a religion? And Prabhupada sometimes would respond, no. This is a science. This is Dharma. Dharma doesn't translate as religion. The Dharma translates as the essential quality, the sustaining, a D, the root means to sustain, the sustaining or essential quality of a thing. So we should see people according to, the like I said, qualities and how they speak. So Tadikshava, they're tolerant, Kurunika, they're merciful. Suvidas, Sarvadema, they're friends. Jata Shatrava, they don't have enemies. You know, if we see someone who just like is focusing on friends and enemies thing, that's one of the things that Prahlada Maharaj rejected. That's not a Vaishnava mentality. So, you know, we can judge. Yes, it's true. We should judge, like, who is a Vaishnava, who is more advanced, who is less advanced. But always be careful. Even if we see it, Kanishta Adhikari, it's described, we're supposed to offer obeisances in our mind. Even someone who chants Hare Krishna once, even one who says, Lord Jesus, not just Hare Krishna, but Lord Jesus once, what to speak of, you know, other Vaishnavas, Sampradayas, or other Gaudiya Vaishnavas, even if they say once, we offer respects in our minds. That doesn't mean we kill them in our body as we offer respects in our minds. So we have to be extremely cautious. And this is the point being brought out here, that Indra, upon hearing this from Narada Muni, is not resentful. He's actually said, wow. He's actually thinking, wow, you saved me from committing an offense. And not only was he attempting to offend here Prahlada Maharaj, who was in the womb of Kayadu, but he was actually offending Kayadu too. That's another problem that was brought out earlier in the chapter, that she was crying like it's his karari bird, you know, like that. And so he's offending a chaste woman. That's also another problem there too. So Narada Muni has saved him from this danger. So, any questions or comments? We have about 10 seconds left for class. Questions, comments, arguments? Should maybe have Jagat Guru fix this microphone system
also,
too.
My mic listening sounds good, but it's no picture.
Oh, it's no picture?
No picture.
Well, I don't look good, so.
But you sound
good. Yeah, anyway, it's better they don't see me anyway. I probably look pretty tired after traveling, so hearing's more important than seeing. It'll be on the internet and Facebook later with the video, because I'm doing this every day.